The Ensemble podcast is intended for professional financial advisors. This content is created in partnership with our sponsor, T. Rowe, Price Australia Limited, ABN 13620 668 895, AFSL 503 741, and is limited to publicly available information. Before acting on any general advice, you should consider whether appropriate and obtain financial advice from a qualified financial advisor. Ensemble does not hold an AFS license and does not provide any financial advice or services or endorse any general advice. If a PDS or IM exists, you should obtain a copy and review it thoroughly before making a decision.
Welcome, listeners, as we embark on an exhilarating journey into the world of impact investing. I'm your host, Karen McLeod, and I'm thrilled to guide you through this four-part series where we'll explore the dynamic landscape of finance with a conscience. It's more than just numbers on a spreadsheet. It's about driving change and shaping a future where prosperity knows no bounds. So join me on this exhilarating journey as we explore how finance meets purpose.
Investing used to be just about making a meaningful return on your investment. But what if your investment could not only deliver a return on your investment, but also do more good, both environmentally and socially, for the world we all live in? The opportunities now to own quality businesses that have the potential to create a positive impact on society and the planet are broader than they have ever been. T. Rowe Price is a premier global asset management organisation actively investing in opportunities to help people thrive in an evolving world. By understanding clients' needs and delivering timely, actionable insights and solutions, we can help them navigate change and achieve better outcomes.
Okay, so welcome. Here we are for the fourth and final episode of Impact Investing. And our two guests today are Hari Balakrishna from T. Rowe Price. And we also have joining us Chris Lang from Ethical Choice Investments. Chris has been an advisor specializing in ethical and impact investing for the last 6 years. Welcome to both our guests.
Okay. Pleasure to be here, Karen.
So this evening, thank you so much for joining us in this final episode. We'll be discussing how impact investing and environment investing are not one and the same. We'll dive into some different areas that clients can actually invest in and have a positive impact with. We'll also be talking about which clients might be likely to be interested in an area and also why impact investing has become more investable. So firstly, I'll speak with you firstly, Chris, if I may. Can you describe, would you say, in your experience, how has impact investing become more investable? Why is it you can invest more in areas that will provide positive impact?
Partly because it's become a thing that people are aware of. So it's something that people know of and are seeking out now. But partly as well, the reporting's gotten better so that we can actually look deeper into companies, and rather than just getting financial data, there are sustainability reports that come from companies, and there are independent third-party tools that look in depth at companies and see what they're doing well and what they're not doing so well and report on that.
So with more information, we're able to make better decisions on behalf of our clients. What would you say, Hari? Why do you think this has sort of evolved to where it is now in your view?
So Karen, I'd say a couple of things. So firstly, just in terms of what impact investing does, I think the realization that mobilizing capital to solving for the sustainable development goals and just the funding gaps that just get, you know, ever and ever wider. You know, what started with like a $3 trillion funding gap pre-COVID is now close to like a $5 trillion funding gap per year. I think the idea that mobilizing capital in that direction has both sustainability, you know, outcomes that are positive, but importantly, participating in companies that provide solutions to driving those sustainability outcomes can result in superior financial outcomes as well. I think that's one part of it. And then the second part of it that, you know, I think I'm, you know, very excited about is, I think, as we spoke about in the prior episode, just the advent of a lot of funds that just kind of slap labels on kind of what they do without a lot of thought in terms of the link between dollars invested and the outcomes. And I think just a growing realization from regulators, from clients, from advisors that, you know, more than ever, we need funds where the link between the dollars invested and the outcome generated needs to be measured, reported on, and, you know, there needs to be a real impact from those dollars invested. And I think that's the other area that impact investing really helps to solve for, right? So effectively solves a lot of the greenwashing risk as well as an outcome measurement aspect as well.
So if I'm an investor, what actually is an impact? How would you describe an impact company, Hari, while I've got you? What is an impact company? What does it look like and how is it intentional?
Yeah, so the way that, you know, we would define impact, Karen, is we'd look at, you know, from an impact perspective, you know, really three different, you know, aspects, right? So the first thing is materiality of revenue exposure. So is this company providing a service, a solution, or a product that is helping solve for a social or environmental goal where that solution is basically the majority of its revenues, right? So in our case, we define it as greater than 50% of revenues aligned with a positive impact activity. The second thing we need to be able to do is we need to be able to measure the impact, right? So if you take an example, you know, one of our holdings, you know, is a company called Nubank, you know, listed in Latin America. This is basically a company that enables financial inclusion. It's one of the world's largest digital banking platforms. And the way it really does that is, you know, working with the underbanked or the unbanked in the system and bringing them into the mainstream of the financial system, right? So in Nubank's case, you know, we'd estimate close to 100% of their revenues aligned with delivering financial inclusion. And then on the second aspect of impact, which is we want to measure, you know, what the impact actually is, you know, we'd look at the fact that close to 6 million people were brought in the financial system for the first time with their first credit or debit card. And we track that metric over time. We track, you know, the 75 million or so customers who were provided access to financial services by Nubank. And then the other aspect of impact, which you brought up yourself, is additionality, right? So how can we be additional through our investments? And that really happens on sort of two dimensions, right? And so, you know, just to level set everyone, additionality is about making a difference to the impact in a positive way. So as a fund manager working with our portfolio companies to ensure that our clients' money is actually delivering real world impact, right? And the way we do that is by encouraging, influencing, working with companies and having strategic engagements on progressing that impact agenda. So, you know, how can we make a difference essentially, you know, to the impact being delivered? There's also other tools like, you know, proxy voting and things like that. But primarily it is through engaging directly and partnering with portfolio companies to drive that impact. So just in a nutshell, impact's really about every company needs to have a positive environmental or social impact in the world through the solution, product, or service it provides alongside a financial return.
Great summary there, Hari. And Chris, what about you? What would you say? How do you describe an impact company to say to a client? Because Hari's explanation is obviously quite a complicated one. Is there something that you would suggest advisors might use to describe what an impact company looks like in a short and simple way?
Yeah, I guess short and simple. I'd probably have three measures of an impact company as well. One is impact. What's that company doing? And is it a positive impact? Measurability again, in line with what Hari said. If you can't measure or see that impact, then there's not really any indication that it's there. So it needs to be something that you can be sure is more than just talk from the company. And intentionality. So this is probably slightly different to what Hari was talking about, but I think the intentionality is really key, which is the impact that they're having a core part of that company? Is that front and center one of their goals? Or is it just kind of a business as usual and nothing particularly special for the sector that they're in? So to have an impact, I kind of feel like these companies need to be out in front of the norm, doing new things. And doing things in a way that will potentially cause change to how those other companies in the sector operate.
That's an interesting point, actually, Chris. So, being out in front is a good point and doing something that's different. Maybe we'll just start now, Chris, with you just talking about, like, to paint a picture for those listening, like, obviously, impact investing can cover many different types. It may be focused on environmental outcomes, health outcomes, technology, quality of life. Are there some examples of impact investing that you like to use with your clients to just describe to them the positive impact they can have and the types of investments they can make in this sector?
Yeah, so the types of Impacts can be in two major areas. So environmental, as you mentioned, and social. So environmental might be around climate, renewables, and environment, bio credits. And social could be things around the essentials of life. So housing, health, education. And it could also be around human empowerment. So I think Ari touched on this earlier, which probably things that we take for granted in the areas that we live, but things like access to banking and financial services, access to internet, things that while we might have a lot of access to those, they can be really empowering for people who are from developing countries where maybe that access isn't a given, and it can really, really improve people's lives.
Mm, that's true, actually. And what about from your perspective, Hari, as a portfolio manager, what are the examples of impact investing sort of that you see within your portfolio, and how is that evolving over time?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, and firstly, Karen, you know, when we look for impact companies, you know, we have a dual mandate, right? So our mandate is to maximize the impact and maximize financial performance. So, you know, very similar to what, you know, Chris said, you know, when we're looking for companies, when we're looking for the materiality, we are also looking for the best in class impact companies. To Chris's point, I think it's really important that companies need to be able to demonstrate something out of the ordinary in terms of, you know, special impact, a special product, trailblaze, you know, either, you know, whether it's financial inclusion or providing healthcare or reducing greenhouse gases. So with that in mind, you know, the way we define impact is, you know, we're quite transparent about the activities that qualifies impact and ones that don't. And so primarily what we look for are companies that reduce greenhouse gases. So those would be not just renewable energy companies, because I think there's much more impact than renewables, but also companies enabling energy efficient solutions. So when you think about all these data centers that are getting built out in the world today, you know, for fulfilling AI demands, cooling the data centers and preventing emissions from those becomes a big part of, you know, thesis. So we own a company like Crane Technologies that would provide a service like that. We would invest in companies that promote healthy ecosystems, so enabling an improvement in air quality, water quality, or land quality. Circular economy stocks, so companies that, you know, reduce manufacturing waste, or companies that would take a product, you know, so like, for example, we own a company called Trex. They take plastic out of landfill. It's one of the companies that has a leading chemical processes. It used to convert plastic out of landfill into decking solutions, which serves as a building material and an infinitely recyclable circular loop. And then in the social side, I'd say companies that promote financial inclusion, like Nubank, you know, would be good examples. Healthcare tends to be a really important, you know, part of our framework as well. But again, with healthcare, to Chris's point, you know, not every healthcare company is an impact company. We've got to make sure that the companies that we invest in some way, shape, or form, are either improving access to healthcare or reducing the cost of really innovative healthcare, or just genuinely have truly groundbreaking solutions, you know, for sort of patient therapies. And then, yeah, we also invest in things that, you know, like cybersecurity, you know, personal and mental fitness, sustainable and smart cities as well, in terms of what we do. But across environmental and social dimensions, those would be a flavor of the kind of activities that we would be looking for. And again, just as a reminder, we would look only for companies that have the overwhelming majority of their revenues aligned with delivering solutions to driving those activities.
Such a breadth of different investment opportunities. And of course, Hari, you'll focus particularly in the equity space. And I know that impact investment companies can be, you know, have impact investments, I suppose, for clients, Chris, in other asset classes. Maybe you want to just describe how you sort of explain to clients how they can invest in impact in other sectors, and to build a portfolio that really suits their overall needs. Is that something you'd like to comment on?
Yeah. So generally, when we think of impact companies, we think of companies, but there are other options like social impact bonds. So these are bonds that are more aligned with fixed interest, where there might be an issue that needs solving that the government identifies, and it's normally a government, but it could be a not-for-profit or a NGO, but it could be something along the lines of scarcity of social housing or mental health management. And it's something that costs the government or that organization a lot of money to address. And so they can put that out to tender in a way. And if there's a company out there that feels that they can do a better job than the government, then that would save the government potentially millions over the 5 or 10 years that they choose to run a program. So if there's a program that's set up, a social impact bond can be a way for a non-government organization to directly address this failing in society or in the environment. And share in the savings that the government creates from doing that well.
Mm. Yeah, it does seem that way, doesn't it? It seems that impact investing is seeing the significant growth worldwide because investors are sort of are looking for ways to provide, as Hari said before, financial capital to some of those social and environmental solutions that they want to see, as well as receiving, obviously, a competitive return for that. And then the regulatory environment has really provided clearer guidelines and there's more confidence in the sector. So it means more expansion in the different investments investors can get exposure to, which would you say, Chris, has been the case over the last 6 years while you've been in this sector?
Yeah, it's definitely grown and expanded. It's also started filtering down. So it used to be previously that it was only wholesale investors and investment funds that were able to access these sorts of investments. It might be because of scale. It might be sort of $500,000 of entry, which tends to knock out your standard mum and dad investor. But we're seeing a lot of different ways where people can now start to access and support these sorts of investments at a more retail level.
Hari, what about from your perspective, how would you describe the way the impact investment sector is evolving, given this is your specialisation also?
Yeah, look, I'd say on a few different dimensions there, Karen, I agree with Chris. You know, one is I think just at a very high level, the number of asset classes that are offering impact investments have broadened significantly, right? So if you think about the roots of impact investing, as Chris said, a lot of it started in kind of social impact bonds, kind of morphed into, social impact companies on the private side, environmental impact companies on the private side. And now I think you can see a lot more cases and applications in listed equities, listed credit, green bonds, blue bonds, things like that. So what I'd say is probably the biggest evolution that I have seen in the last, certainly I can speak for the listed equity space, the biggest evolution I'd say has happened across three dimensions, right? So the first one is just the sheer availability of funds like this to the end retail investor, right? As Chris said previously, this was the purview of, high net worth individuals and, wholesale investors only. So I think that's been a great outcome that retail investors can vote, with their feet and invest in these funds if they want to. The second dimension that I would say is just greater guidance on how to deliver impact in listed equities and just a greater clarification of a lot of these frameworks. So that what, Chris and I have spoken about, the intentionality, the measurability, the materiality and things like that. A lot of it has been, coded into frameworks by organizations like the Global Impact Investing Network, which is one of the leading collective bodies for impact investors around the world. And then the third thing that I would say, which I think is probably the most pleasing thing to see, is I think at the corporate level, just a much greater focus on product sustainability, which I think is driving behavioral change in corporates. Now it's slow, right? There's a very long way to go on a lot of these dimensions. So please don't take this as like everything sorted out. It's slow progress, but it's just very pleasing to see progress nonetheless. We've seen examples of, companies accelerating, say, renewable deployments, or if we've got a company providing, let's say, a green hydrogen solution as part of like a wider remit of solutions, accelerating the green hydrogen solution. Again, managers like us, it's incumbent on us with that additionality and responsibility to drive that impact agenda and have those kind of conversations with these companies. But those would be the three big developments, I would say. And I think all of it is leading to, again, I'm going to say improving, not improved, because there's still a long way to go, improving ability for us to capture data, to measure outcomes, and just generally be more transparent, with the end investor, which, given that this is an area, where I think historically there just hasn't been enough, data and sort of measurability constructs to be fully transparent on.
That's an exciting way forward, I think. And just to reassure, I suppose, advisors that are listening, like, how do you ensure that your impact investments are indeed delivering both the social and environmental benefits and impact you're looking for and financial returns? A bit about the process that impact investors should know about.
Sure. I'd say, you know, the financial side hopefully is pretty straightforward, right? In the sense of people can track the performance of a fund, right? And so that's probably the easiest way to look at, you know, how funds like these would perform. Now, the last couple of years have actually been a relative to a broad, you know, because this is a nascent asset class, certainly in the listed equity space, there really hasn't been like a, you know, Morningstar or Lipper category, you know, for impact or an impact benchmark that's been launched, right? And so in the absence of that, you know, a lot of impact managers have just used like a broad, you know, equity benchmark. And you know, we invest because of the, you know, the definition of what impact is. And, you know, we went through sort of how rigorous that is. You know, we need to be able to find material exposure to a positive impact activity. It needs to be measurable. We need to be able to make a difference, you know, to the impact, so on and so forth. So we find only about 400 to 500 companies in the global index out of roughly 3,000 or so companies that could even potentially get close to qualifying as impact investments. So the bar is pretty high. So what it means is you can end up with performance outcomes that are quite different, you know, to the benchmark, particularly when you have, you know, energy that was driving markets in 2022 and we wouldn't be invested in, you know, fossil fuels, for example, or when you have the Magnificent Seven sort of, you know, having narrow leadership that we've seen really for the last 18 months or so. But in terms of process, what it's so there is, you know, taking that universe of 400 private companies, really honing into the measurement process. So we actually use a process we borrowed from the Impact Management Project, which is, you know, widely accepted framework on impact measurement, which is called the Five Dimensions of Impact. So we run every stock through that Five Dimensions of Impact process. You know, we work out what the strategic goal of the impact is, who is getting affected. So we identify the target. We identify the impact risks, you know, what are the risks to the impact not getting delivered? And then we'd also look at the scale and the depth of the impact. So what is the impact currently being delivered? What is the change in impact? So on and so forth. And then, you know, we'd run traditional financial analysis on these stocks as well, right? So can we, because of the solution this company is delivering, can we see a difference in what we think the earnings cash flow returns of these companies are going to be 5 years out compared to market expectations? And we value these on price to free cash flow that have the best risk-adjusted return across both impact and financial dimensions. So to give you an example, you know, one of the companies we're invested in, Danaher, they're a life science tools company. They basically provide a lot of the innovative life science tools that go into healthcare innovation, you know, both in biotechs and biopharma. And just the sheer advent of investment in healthcare, you know, the sheer innovation we're seeing in cancer cures and Alzheimer's and things like that, cell and gene therapy, have meant that the fact that a company like this at the leading edge of providing the most innovative tools and solutions to a lot of these healthcare companies to allow them to innovate and bring down the cost of, you know, really, you know, life-saving drugs, you know, to the rest of the population. We find that a company like that actually has a better growth algorithm, right? So we think because of the investment in healthcare and because of the focus on impact, we think this is a company that will have over the next decade a much better growth algorithm than it did in the prior decade, right? So that's the link between the impact and the sort of financial outcomes.
That was so very well explained. Thank you so much for that, Hari. Just so reassuring for advisors listening that you have such a thorough process, both for the financial and the impact assessment. What about you, Chris? How do you explain to your clients, like, that is there a perception that they might have about, you know, what is risk and reward balanced when they do impact investing versus traditional investments? Do you have that conversation about how they're going to vary from benchmark? How does that work when you're advising clients, Chris?
I think Hari hit it on the head when he talked about the companies that he's looking at tend to be looking into innovative new areas and finding solutions to issues that are out there. And I guess one of the points that I like to make is that if there's a company that's doing a really good job of solving an issue that no one else is, that's probably going to be a successful company. There's every chance that that's going to do better than your standard sort of healthcare company, if it was a healthcare company doing new things.
So, Yes, I think, yeah, well said, Chris. I think you're right. Having that extra information to make those decisions is helping them select the most appropriate companies for the portfolio. Yeah. What about the kinds of clients, Chris, that you're seeing? Do you notice that there's any certain demographics of your clients that are interested, like are younger clients leaning towards more environmental causes or focusing more on healthcare or climate change solutions? How are you, or older clients focused on different sorts of investments? How do you engage with them to find out what sort of impact investments are best for them?
Yeah, look, it's really just the same as any other ethical investing interest. You have the conversation with that client. You find out what they're interested in, what the areas are that are important to them, and what sort of solutions are going to be acceptable for them to seek out and support. But to be honest, my personal experience is that the majority of clients just want to have an impact. They might feel more comfortable or more focused on the environmental or the social side of things. Climate change can be a big one for people across all age ranges, but I would say the majority of my clients just want to have an impact and want to see that their money is being a force for change. And exactly which of those positive change areas that they're seeking out is less important than knowing that that money's being really well allocated and used.
That's actually quite good to know. So don't generalize between the different demographics. Just ask the questions and make sure you sort of foster that engagement with them so that they are getting the right investments for their needs, I suppose. What about you, Hari? Would you say, do you pay any heed to what the different demographics are looking for and their different preferences, or are you just looking to... Over to you, Hari.
You sure can. I mean, so, you know, we definitely want to, you know, provide solutions, right, you know, for what our clients are looking for. So there's no question that, as Chris said, you know, different clients will have different needs and requirements. At a broad brush, I guess what we're trying to do is, you know, we're trying to offer our clients the ability to have both an environmental and a social impact, you know, across those dimensions. For select clients who want, you know, a particular area more than others, right? You know, and this tends to happen more on the institutional side. If people want to carve out, you know, say more of the environmental side or the social side, you know, that's certainly something, you know, we're, you know, willing and prepared to do in terms of a customized solution. But generally we find clients, you know, want to have that sort of broad impact across both kind of environmental and social dimensions. And as Chris said, they want to have an impact. Our hope is that by providing something that is, you know, truly authentic, accountable, you know, to our clients, you know, our hope is, you know, clients will be discerning between funds that do that and funds that don't, in terms of that authenticity of trying to offer what we do.
I think it's really good to know that you've got that ability to tailor the approach depending on what the client's needs are. And would you also say that at the moment there is a bit of a merger happening between impact that's providing both environmental and social outcomes that's coming together with a sustainability-like outcome as well, that they're providing those dual impacts? How does that work in the portfolio, Hari?
Yeah, it's pretty rare, Karen, to find something that is, you know, like 100% linked to an environmental outcome and 100% linked to a social outcome, because, as you know, generally we're looking for pure play exposure, you know, to those themes that I spoke to you earlier about, right, in terms of reducing greenhouse gases. Now, obviously a company, so, you know, you take the company that I explained, you know, the example I gave earlier, Trane Technologies, or you look at the water, you know, some of the water companies we're invested in, like, you know, Mueller Water, they will provide an environmental solution, in Trane's case, reducing greenhouse gases, or in Mueller's case, enabling water infrastructure. That tends to be effectively what they do. So it's pretty rare that a company like Trane will do that and then also provide healthcare or financial inclusion, right? So generally, we'll have a pure play company for those. But generally, what we find is the companies that provide a positive impact activity, they just tend to be more thoughtful about sustainability issues more broadly, right? So maybe they don't have a social impact, but they certainly will treat their employees better, or they'll be more thoughtful about social issues in general, in terms of dealing with their customers and suppliers and things like that. So that's what we generally find. But to directly answer your question, it's pretty rare to find a company doing both at the same time.
Okay, good to note. I think in the bond space, I think that's increasingly perhaps more common than in the equity space. But Chris, what about you? Do you see that that's something of interest from your clients, that sort of merged environmental and social overlap?
Yeah, I think so. I think when you step back a little bit, you can actually see that a lot of these things are quite interlinked. So a really good example is renewables. So obviously, clean energy is an environmental impact. It reduces carbon emissions. It's really positive for the planet, but it also reduces the cost of power, and that has social benefits. Another example might be, well, overpopulation is a big impact on the environment, and probably one of the best ways to reduce birth rates is to educate young women, and that has an impact socially and improves the lives of those women and the societies that they're in, but it also has an impact on the environment, and longer term can be beneficial for the environment as well. So it's kind of hard to say on a broader scale that this is just something that's environmentally focused or just something that's socially focused, because these things tend to be interlinked.
Yes, they're great examples. Thank you for sharing those. Well, just before we wind up, I just would encourage those listening to really understand that as you've both described so beautifully, impact is, you know, touching on so many sectors of society beyond traditional environmental causes, so they can invest with impact to solve for a variety of needs and for a variety of different client requirements. So it's quite compelling, obviously, to make positive change while generating a great financial return. Is there anything you'd both like to summarize just for those listeners in talking about the different types of impact and how it has become more an investable space for those listening? Kari, would you like to go first?
Sure. I mean, I guess if I were to summarize, you know, how I think about impact, you know, I'd summarize by saying that I couldn't be more excited about the prospects, you know, for companies delivering impact, right? So when you think about the environmental issues we face, you think about the social issues we face, you know, a lot of these are getting exacerbated, right, as time kind of goes on. So the need is greater than ever to find companies that provide, you know, these solutions for better environmental and social outcomes. And, you know, when I think about the collection of equities we own in the portfolio, more so than ever, we just find, you know, a lot of these companies are having better product cycles or having greater demand from the end, you know, customers, or they're having just a, you know, and from an impact perspective, just having a greater and greater impact. And so when we think about the collective of the portfolio, and I think about the next, you know, decade, couple of decades, I think this is a really fertile ground, you know, for clients, you know, to think about allocating, you know, their money to, in terms of both having that impact, and equally importantly, you know, if you believe that these are the companies having, you know, better fundamentals, you know, than a lot of companies in the index, you know, over time, good absolute returns as well.
How exciting. What about you, Chris? Tell us the future.
Well, I guess the way I see it is that if you've got the choice between a sort of standard investment that has a financial return or an impact-focused investment which has a similar return but also improves the our planet and our society, then it's really a bit of a no-brainer. Why wouldn't you choose the one that has those external benefits as well as just the financial benefit? I really do see impact investing growing because it's just a total no-brainer. Why wouldn't you?
Yes, so well said, Chris, very simply, and Hari too. Thank you so much, both. Such a delightful episode. Thank you so much. I'm so grateful to hear both of your insights this evening.
Thank you. That was really enjoyed that and pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thanks, Karen. Really.
Pleasure.